What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday.
I'm going to be in the car tomorrow, and it's going to be like, fucking Michael Block, I can't. This guy, I think about this guy when I sleep, like I just completely shifting gears to professional golf. Henry, I'm going to let you lead us in today.
Semi-professional.
Semi. 54 tour.
Wild Rice is looking at you saying, like, put me on a plate by myself, either like me or don't. And don't play any games here. This is not journalism. We've had that conversation before.
No, this so is not. This is fucking Mudball Monday.
Nobody take this as exactly. Blocky bombs. You get it a Mick Ultra with a shot of Dwarves on top, and everyone hammers it. It'd be fantastic.
Good morning, friends of the Thai Podcast. It is Walker Simons here with Henry Schimpf. Today we're back. It's Mudball Monday. It is a Friday recording currently, and today felt like we've been hammering the culture over the head recently. So we're going to get to, I guess, some competition. We're talking about LIV today. We're talking about world ranking points. We're talking about world ranking points today. We're talking about the Netflix Cup. We're talking about TGL, Tiger's killing me with the acronyms here. So that's what we're getting into today. Before we get into any bulk work here in Mudball Monday, we get straight into the dirt. Henry, how the hell are you? And what's your dirt?
Yeah, I'll jump straight into my dirt. So played in this like golf outing yesterday, and among many things they had out there were these canned margaritas, which is just like a horrendous idea, I would have to say. These bastards were like 12.5% alcohol. I took a look at this can and I'm just like, that is so irresponsible. That's like looking at an energy drink with like 700 milligrams of caffeine. And it didn't even taste strong. You know, I mean, you could have convinced me if you had just handed it to me and I didn't look at it, I'd be like, oh yeah, it's like a beer. You know, it's like 4.5 or 5% alcohol. Like I can sit here and have a dozen of these. I mean, I would have been rolling on the ground after like six. So a strange drinking, but that's what I'm going to throw out this week is these dangerous canned margaritas that tasted dangerously good. If you like a margarita, frankly, which I don't hate a margarita. So that's that. Rolling straight into my eating, man, there's kind of a lot to cover this week. Trying to decide here, like completely on the fly, which direction I'm going to go. I think, you know, you a couple weeks ago described with your drinking as cinnamon being the through line. I like that term, the through line. I think the tortilla has been the through line this week, is just as the vehicle. And, you know, in terms of vehicles, it's really sparked some deep thought. I'm a fucking idiot in my mind. And, you know, what I've come to with vehicles, we talk all the time about particularly breakfast vehicles, but any sort of vehicle, of course, being what you eat something from with whatever, a tortilla, sourdough bread, an English muffin, a bagel. These are all vehicles. And I think my big thing with a vehicle is if the vehicle isn't worthy of being eaten by itself, you should not be eating said vehicle. So I'm constantly finding myself when I'm eating a good tortilla, just like ripping a little knob off and like saying, okay, what is this tortilla like on its own? And I mean, honestly, most of the tortillas I'm eating, I'd eat like six of those things just solo. Obviously true of a good biscuit, right? Like a biscuit can be eaten by its lonesome. You know, I'll give kind of an anti shout out here. Like I'm not eating a sandwich off of Dave's killer bread, taking a little nip, little knob saying like, yeah, like give me some regular plain bread, right? So I think that's kind of what my vehicle thinking has been as of late. I've been eating a lot of tortillas, but it's more so the tortilla itself that has really sparked a lot of thought in my mind. Tacos of all different types, breakfast burritos have been big. Been doing in-house breakfast burritos. It's such a so here's been my play with a breakfast burrito, and I'll move on after this. But this is a little shout to anyone that works in an office or whatever your situation is. Doesn't have to be this case. You can just let it sit for a bit. But I come home, you know, go to the gym in the morning, come back briefly to make breakfast. I live right near my office, so kind of drop my car off, whatever, and make a quick breakfast burrito, wrap it in foil, and then toss it in my bag, walk to the office. It's still warm, but the cheese melts, which is big. And if you're not putting cheese on your breakfast burritos, then choose something else for breakfast. Truly. Like I'm not saying there's anything wrong with not putting cheese on a breakfast burrito, but I guess what I am saying is it's just like, just go a different direction, you know, because the best breakfast burrito does have cheese on it. I think that that would be the opinion there, right? I honestly feel the same way about a burger. I'm not saying a burger has to have cheese, but if I'm going to nix the cheese, there's so many other things on this earth I could eat. And so like, why would I be eating a burger without cheese? That's just one guy's opinion.
It doesn't need much, but a little bit is so necessary.
But it needs it. Right. Yeah. No, right. When I say cheese on a breakfast burrito, like I'm not looking for this thing to be a breakfast oozing quesadilla, right?
Right.
Like, but the cheese should make its presence known. And that 15 minutes in foil gives it a perfect opportunity to melt. If the cheese isn't melted, like what are we doing here?
Are we doing? Yeah, that's tough.
Just a bad deal. Okay, before we get too deep in this, I'm going to move on to my reading and continue to talk about food, of course. I've been reading some other stuff as well, but you know, something I've dipped into this week, and this is like every 2-3 weeks, at least once a month. I'm a big fan of cookbooks, but I never like dial up a recipe necessarily from a cookbook. For me, cookbooks are much more, I view them as a textbook, frankly. Like I don't ever do this, but you wouldn't whip out the chemistry textbook necessarily to be like, oh, let me like find an experiment to run, you know, but it's like, it's kind of side reading. And so when a great chef writes a cookbook, I think it's interesting to flip through it and just see how they think about dishes. Again, I'm not like pulling it up to like make a specific recipe. It's more to provide inspiration, see how a chef thinks through things. So our guy, my guy, your guy, everybody's guy, Dave Chang, Cooking at Home. I brought that one out this week and just have kind of been flipping through, grabbing some inspiration here, some inspiration there, just some thoughts on things that I can. And that's what I love about his cooking in particular is, yeah, he'll do recipes, but I think he's, as chefs go, like pretty anti-recipe. It's more of just like little tidbits here and there about how he goes about the kitchen. You know, the kitchen and cooking, I mean, it's as broad as golf, right? Like if you're writing a book about golf, you're not sitting there talking about like one situation after another, like buried in the right rough, back left pin. Here's exactly how to skin the cat. It's more of like broad strokes. And that's kind of how I think about cooking. I'm just looking for how the greats kind of go about the game. So, you know, we live in a game of games of games of games of games. There are millions of layers of games, and this is just one of the games that I like to play and get deep in.
Some call that game theory, and
game theory
might or might not have been how we got to house theory. One of many games, as you said.
Correct. Thinking. I'm going to throw you a shout out here. Great episode that I guess just released last night, this morning, with Casey Bannon from the Golfers Journal. And so if anyone hasn't listened to that, I would highly recommend going and checking that one out. Something that Casey said that really stuck with me, it's something that I need desperately in my life. The idea of a filter for ideas, I guess. I'm an ideas guy. I've always got random zany shit coming into my mind. I think that's not a bad thing. I certainly have some good ideas that come out of it. But his concept of a filter, of kind of having something to begin with, where you say, okay, here is the box that an idea should fit within and run through, and it needs to come out with a specific intention and deliverable. That's something that I definitely need and plan on implementing. It's not a bad thing to have tons of ideas, I don't believe, but they should have to run through, some form of a filter. And if they make it through that filter, there should be a very clear sense of like, okay, so where's this going? What is this accomplishing? Who is it accomplishing it for? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Millions of layers of games, as I've already said. I'm going to stop. This could get bad fast. I'm going to throw it to you for your dirt.
Well, dude, I feel like this week I have some of the most uninteresting dirt of any Mudball Monday that we've ever done. So part of that, I think it is actually fascinating to dive into like the most mundane weeks ever, because like we have a lot of, like we as a collective have a lot of those. But also I want to kind of use the word piggyback, but I do want to kind of piggyback off of a couple of things that you said. So drinking, I got my Mudball, got the Mudball shipment in, the full Mudball from Good Walk Coffee. I ordered some South American dark roast, which I really haven't had before, I don't think, not in bulk.
Shit slaps.
Dude, yeah, really good. Excited to try that. I've been on the breakfast ball, which is full calf. And as we know, dark, even if it is like full calf, takes it a little bit easy on you. And then, of course, like dialed up the mud ball half calf. Got a little photo shoot in with the package. So it's been a big coffee week, and frankly, running on less sleep than I'd like to this week. And so it's just been a great crush to have, honestly, being full calf. Ton of water, ton of salt as usual, and sad to report to you guys after New Orleans, no Sazeracs were had.
We whiffed on the Sazeracs.
Fucking terrible. So
where were we? We were trying to go somewhere that absolutely would have had the rack. Oh, it was the carousel bar. We would have gotten into a rack there. But yeah, it was, I think other people were ripping the racks. But we did all right. We got some good stuff down.
Yeah, no, it was good. No eating
canned margaritas there.
No canned margaritas there. And that was nice. I love a margarita. And I probably wouldn't have looked. So good on you.
The sauce man is coming to Austin tomorrow night, and so margaritas beware.
Yeah, I'm very down. As far as like eating this week, I guess I'll start off with the real shit. It's just been painfully unsexy. Like, really, like had like, you know, six things of I don't even know what you call them, six packages of ground beef this week, and I had a bunch of sushi rice to finish up. So I did enjoy doing that. Like, I don't make sushi rice for every, let's say 2 cups of rice I make. Excuse me, for every 20 cups of rice I make. Like, maybe two of those are sushi rice and the other is just jasmine. Like, that's kind of been my gamer. And, you know, with the varietals, man, sitting right next to me, I feel like I gotta check in on where you're at.
Well, I don't need to share my opinion. I think people know where I sit. My smooth rotation as of late. I mean, I don't discriminate against any varietal of rice. There are at least 12 that I have in my rotation, which is kind of ridiculous, but it's true. Recently, it's been long grain brown, short grain brown, and Arborio has been making its claim. But I'm curious to hear, like, give me a quick, let's say 4 or 5, your power rank of rice varietals.
You know, at home, it's like long grain jasmine. I don't even know if they make a short grain jasmine or sushi rice, and it's almost always jasmine. However, I'm trying to think back the last couple of years since I've been in this kitchen specifically, but I do really like wild rice, and I love orzo, but that's not rice, even though it looks like it. I never really have made a risotto at home, come to think of it. Like, when you make the Arborio, are you making risotto? Or is
it crispy rice, baby? We've talked about the crispy rice. Arborio is the elite play because it has it really holds moisture nicely. So I tried a short grain brown for the crispy rice, and short grain brown just says like, nope, I am not holding water in. It's just like, which is part of what I like about it, but it's a very dry, chewy sort of rice.
Yes.
If that's not your style, then, you know, an Arborio is much like more a like mealy a mealy rice. I mean, they're kind of one and the same, right?
Yeah.
Long, I mean, a nice jasmine is really, really nice, but you know, and basmati, I mean, we can't forget about basmati. Wild is a good call. Here's what I'm going to get.
Jasmine's
out of
outside of the brown rices. Jasmine is the driest. Basmati is kind of like a somewhere in the middle between sushi rice or arborio and jasmine. But
wild, my thing there is like, wild's like the strong independent woman, right? It's like
yes,
mess with me, like. It doesn't want to be seasoned. It doesn't want to be made into crispy rice. It doesn't want to be in a bowl. Like, wild rice is looking at you saying, like, put me on a plate by myself, either like me or don't, and don't play any games here, right? Like, other forms of rice, I feel like rice is damn near a vehicle. I mean, I think we could very well put certain varietals into the vehicle conversation, but wild rice withstanding, it is fully its own strong independent entity.
Right. Rice is one of those things that always keeps a friend close. Like, you're never going to eat rice on its own, but it does really well with other things. It's like, I've been on the sweet potato kick this year. We could go forever on this. I've been on the sweet potato kick this year, and I stay away from the rice most of the time. But it's so versatile. It's such a great starch. Anyways, I want to piggyback. I'll say it again. I want to piggyback off of the vehicle discussion and tortillas, because this week, I think it was Tuesday, I was just like craving dessert. I mean, I was eating like a machine on Tuesday, but I had no dessert. Like, I was at a Big Blueberry. You know, normally if I'm craving something, we've discussed this on Mudball Monday, it's like a little bit of Greek yogurt, maple syrup, which is always my like sugar of choice, kind of, because it's good shit. If you don't know, get that Aunt Jemima stuff out of the way. Like, they sell. I was in a Whole Foods the other day picking up some apples, and they had some maple syrup on sale. And it was like, you know, $8 a carton. And it was like a pretty decent sized carton, whereas they normally sell them for like $18, $20. Anyways, a little bit of Greek yogurt, maple syrup, Big Blue, cinnamon, like home run. But I had some tortillas, and I was like, fuck it. I'm going to, you know, throw these tortillas in a pan with like literally the smallest swipe of like room temp butter, hot ass pan, just like sear kind of, where it puffs up, and then a little bit of cinnamon, and just put some maple syrup on it, rolled it up like a, I don't even know what, tostada. And it was amazing. It was not just good. Like, it was not just average. It was aces. So
vehicle, it's funny you talk. Say that. I had this thought when we did our full day of tacos for National Taco Day. That was more or less what was kind of going through my mind, was some sort of a dessert taco situation, crispy banana. I don't know what yes. All plantain gang.
Yeah. And that's very strong stuff. But anyways, enough with the eating. Reading. I'm reading the Lean Startup this week. I still had it when we were together. And I'll probably finish it up on the flight tomorrow. It's really good. It basically just talks you through the stages of a startup, and it's been fun to track it. Like, I read this book for the first time when I was a junior in college, and it made sense to me, but it just seemed like a little out of reach kind of. And it's a bit of, it's just kind of nuts and bolts stuff. I do like some of the more, I do like it when the author's name is Eric Ries. I like it when he expands on stuff and tells stories. That's like the part of the book that I get the most from. But now, having been through some things that are, you know, somewhat entrepreneurial or just like creative things that you're putting into the world and not keeping for yourself, I'm tracking with the first couple chapters like I didn't when I was a junior in college. And that's been interesting, and have been kind of paying attention to things that are being said in the book that feel off, like, oh, I haven't really hit that yet, or, oh shit, I've been through that, but I, you know, chose the wrong direction. So that's been kind of my like side reading piece. I don't know what I'm going to read next, so we'll keep you posted next month about one day. Thinking some random stuff. I've been trying to spend more time barefoot at the end of the day. I've been spending a whole lot of time in shoes, and this is something that I used to do a lot, but kind of got away from. So just trying to dial back in the foot game. Like, every time I run, I try to walk, you know, the last couple hundred yards in the grass with my shoes off, to just kind of remind my feet what the actual ground feels like. And it's crazy when you haven't taken your shoes off in a while, it kind of like tickles. And then you go through these stages, like it tickles at first, and then you realize, oh, I actually should walk slightly different than I walk with shoes on. And then you kind of adjust, and then you get all these different textures with concrete and grass and mulch and whatever on your feet. It's nice. And it really does kind of affect your body all the way up to the hips. Like, it takes a while to kind of notice that stuff, but I need to start doing more of that and have been doing that this week. Thank you for the love on the Casey episode. I really enjoyed talking to him. Super cool dude. We've kind of talked a little bit here and there and know a lot of people who know him. And yeah, it's always cool. Like when you're preparing for a guest, everybody's so different. I mean, if there's anything we've learned through doing this podcast, it's that. But you know, it was fun to kind of flush out some of his thoughts on building a brand and podcasting. And I mean, the list goes on and on and on. But yeah, he brought up one of my favorite or more favorite Steve Jobisms that kind of builds on exactly what you were mentioning in your dirt, Henry, which is about focus, right? Like you definitely are an ideas guy. Like you pop out a million ideas. And that is a good thing. Like it definitely is a good thing. And, you know, with us being a team, it's really interesting how you do need somebody in this role to like exercise focus. And you do both of these. Like you have to. Steve Jobs would always, he would be in meetings or having discussions with people. And at random times he would get up and say, why are we talking about this? Like, why does this actually contribute to what we have agreed on that we're going to be focused on? And he would just like redirect the meeting entirely back to why are we at work? Like, why are we even here right now? And Casey talked a lot about that. And that's something I feel strongly and like always need to be reminded of. So I'm working on focus, like very fundamental grip, stance, whatever. It's like, how do you actually focus on, you know, one or two things? So that's my dirt. Excited to talk, completely shifting gears to professional golf. Henry, I'm going to let you lead us in today.
Semi-professional.
Semi. 54 tour. Trying, so desperately trying to get in good standing. Where the governing bodies and the official world golf rankings, the PGA Tour, as we all know, has discussed this coupling of the two tours, led, you know, morally kind of by very different bubbles, and it's going to be interesting to see how these two will marry. I think at this point it is fairly evident that they will. Have to marry. It's kind of this like arranged, weird, arranged marriage situation. We've got some.
It's not for sure by any means.
It's not. But we really won't know anything until late December. So we're here to speculate. Henry,
speculate is the right word. This is not journalism. We've had that conversation before.
No, this is not. This is fucking Mudball Monday.
Nobody take this as exactly. This is not. You know, there. It's like some weird. You know, talking about marriages. It's like you know, maybe one part journalism, like you know, six parts editorial, and then just fucking Mudball Monday, whatever the fuck that's supposed to mean. So,
the glue, the cheese.
Yeah, like I don't know where we're going here, but let's start it by just saying, okay, what did happen? Like obviously Liv wanted to gain world ranking points. They wanted to have the opportunity for their events to be ranked on the official world golf ranking. Most important thing there by far, just so that we're kind of all on the same page, like there are other good and important ranking systems, Data Golf. I mean, honestly, the Sagarin rankings that Golf Week does, like they hold plenty of water. But the Ogre rankings are what get you into the majors and the big events. And to me, if we've learned anything, this isn't to me, this is just like, this probably is pretty journalistic to say that if we've learned anything over the last 3 years in pro golf, 2 years in pro golf, it's that people like three things. They like money, they like majors, and they like Michael Block. And those three things are actually shockingly married. You know, they're kind of like, that's a three-way marriage there. But anyway, the majors are the main thing that this whole world ranking discussion has to do with. If it weren't for the majors, none of this would be going on. If those guys had actually made their bed and said, hey, look, I'm playing for a bag, ask Taylor Gooch about that, and I don't really care about any sort of legacy or anything like that. I'm not going to worry about playing in Masters, the US Open, the British Open, or the PGA. Then, you know, we wouldn't be having these discussions. But like Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed, Phil Mickelson, Dustin Johnson, all of these guys who have gone to live, who still have like objectively a lot of great golf in them. I forgot Brooks Koepka, who won one of these things this year. I think he did he win the PGA or was it Block? Can't remember.
You know,
I mean, Block
I think
won the
jury's
the week,
still out on that.
But I think Brooks won the tournament.
I know one thing. Blocky's in the race for the PIP, and Brooks is definitely not.
Of course, we've already gotten to Block. Like Block has won. Just throwing it out there in a general sense. Like he has won because as soon as we start talking golf, he's just like he's like traipsing around in the back of my mind in his Jordans with his smug little facial hair, wearing his dwarf's hat. Like I can't get him out of my head. Okay, sorry. So world ranking, like that's the only thing that matters here. Dustin Johnson doesn't give a flying F. I'll try to curb my F word usage a little bit here and there. I've already dropped like 9 of them today about where he actually sits in this official world golf ranking. But what he does care about is his access to the majors. And so there's an interesting part of this whole conversation when it comes to LIV of like, okay, well, who are the guys that either have shown form in the last 3-ish years to where there are still some exemptions present, or guys who have won the Masters or the PGA or the British Open, where you do hold on to those exemptions essentially for life or for a reasonable extent of your career, versus some guys who are really good, but like they don't have any of these exemptions, right? And so it doesn't feel at face value all that significant. If you just like saw the headline and didn't really kind of break through the context of things, you know, you might look at it and say like, eh, what's the big deal? Like they're just kind of out there dicking around anyway, which is 100% true. But you know, Bryson DeChambeau doesn't want to wake up in 2027 and be like, I'm still pretty darn good at golf. Like, yeah, it's the 54 tour, but I'm out here, you know, still shooting some pretty low numbers and like, I can't play in the majors anymore, right? And that could be what's ahead of us pending these potential mergers and all of the rest.
Well,
and so that,
to clarify,
that's kind of the entry-level stuff.
I mean, he can't play in the PGA and the Players, you know, and that the Players is the big one. But
you're right. You are right. You know, Block could play.
He can play in the majors. Say that again. I missed it.
Block, he can play in the PGA or excuse the Players, right? Like they could slip him an exemption, which is, I mean, nobody's safe. Absolutely.
Block, he's in the PGA for like 7 different reasons.
Right.
But the players, dude. Fucking put,
I mean, it's
Michael
a short
Block
golf course.
We've green with a thing of canes. Like, I mean, it's a PR masterpiece. Like they have to.
Blocky and Golden Boy. He's going to be the logo. Blocky. We should start calling him Blocky West. He's
I can just see the billboard.
The new
like
PGA
I can just
Tour
see it.
Logo.
I'm going to be in the car tomorrow and it's going to be like fucking Michael Block. I can't this guy. I think about this guy when I sleep. Like I just, that's the soundbite of the episode. I can't get him out of my head.
You know, it's going to be the freaking foot, you know, the 7-iron on 15 at Oak Hill. That is going to be the new PGA Tour silhouette logo, undoubtedly. I hate this game. I hate it all. Okay, back to the action. Not that that wasn't action.
That was action.
Give me some brief context on where your head is at with regard to the TGL, whatever that's supposed to mean. I guess I do know what it means, but I don't really know what it means, nor does anybody. Netflix Cup? Truly have no idea what that's supposed to mean. Like in your eyes, those being pretty clearly like anti-live, right? Like these are the guys who have stayed, the Cat, Rory, etc., who are pulling these things together to essentially create more revenue streams as if these top players need them to say, hey, look, you've done a good thing here to stay on the PGA Tour and we're going to hook you up. What are your thoughts there on how this makes its way into this whole conversation?
Yeah, for backstory, like the marriage that I was talking about earlier, before you so rudely interrupted, that was like a Kanye, you know how Kanye's singing during his interviews now when somebody talks over him? He, la, 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 la. Anyway, no, I'm just fucking with you. The bad marriage thing, the point there is that golf is going to have to change. Like, once the Saudis got involved, the TGL, the Netflix Cup, all of that is proof that the PGA Tour knows, the players know that golf is changing. Like the 72 hole model that we grew up with watching the PGA Tour. And it's not just the 72 holes. It's the 72 holes with no competing tours. It's the 72 holes where every golfer, professional golfer in the world wants to be on the PGA Tour. It's like that is no longer good enough. And it will never be the same. Will we continue to have 72 hole regular season events? Yes. But the big gap, which we've talked about from jump, being, you know, not so close to the action, frankly, is that the best players in the world have to compete with one another again. That's it. And the official world golf ranking seems to be like artificially lowering the players who have gone to live in such a way that, like, if you look at data golf rankings, you mentioned Sargon data golf, like, it's showing that Gutschmann, for example, who's ranked, what, like 171st in the official world golf rankings, who, like, whether you think he's dicking around or not, he's just not 171st, you know? And so over time, I think what the only inevitable answer to me is that the only way that the fans are satisfied, the players are satisfied, the governing bodies are satisfied, and like the key owners of the game of golf, like, I hate that we're even using that sort of terminology, but at this point it sounds like it's inevitable.
Yasser in the jackets.
Right. The only like equilibrium point here is that the best players in the world have to play together. And I think we'll continue to see technological change, the way TV is covered, all sorts of things. But this is the very, very tip of the iceberg. It's almost like, you know, beta testing stage where like LIV, we forget, is still like only 2 years old, you know? And this TGL, I was on their website today and it was just, it's kind of embarrassing stuff, mostly because they're literally using LIV's playbook. You know, like, what were the early criticisms from, you know, big media and the PGA Tour and the PGA Tour players? Was like, it's not really clear what their long-term vision is, right? And really just overall bashing for like having a shitty product. Like their first couple tournaments, the broadcast was just kind of like all over the place. And with it being that early, it's so easy to criticize, but you take TGL, it's like direct response to the team format. Like the way I understand it is that if Rory and Tiger and whoever else, all the big guys, are sitting around at round table, like nobody's recording them, you know, there are no bugs in the room, and they're talking about the future of golf and their involvement with that, the only way they bind together and fund this new, like, you know, digital prime time indoor 60-foot simulator type company is if they know that this is what it's going to take to compete. And like, this is the next step of Phil's quote unquote, like, chess match, you know, this is like their move of many. And I just find it so interesting that equally TGL is like just as unclear. There's no real long-term vision. And, you know, thinking back to early LIV when players were just like one by one committing, it's so funny reading these like newsletter reports or whatever when players commit to TGL, and it's like so clearly their PR team kind of speaking through the players, and they're all kind of like posting on Twitter the same time in the same way, and making these statements. Like, I was reading Lucas Glover's earlier, and he was like, it took a lot of hard work to earn another trophy this year, and I'm proud that my game is now on a level where I have the opportunity to tee it up on TGL. Like, I hope I can you know, do my team proud. And it's like, this is a primetime TV event where you're like hitting into a screen. This is not the same thing. Like, we can't act like this is the same thing as you winning the Wyndham, and like overcoming the putting yips, and like the list goes on. So
don't say that word. Don't say it, please.
Yeah. Apologies for the rant, but yeah, I'm a little bit confused. I want to give TGL and the Netflix Cup like grace, because it's cool. It seems like it's inevitable. We need to trust that those who are closest to the information are making the best next step to what, you know, my theory and what my hope is, that we're just getting closer and closer and closer to figuring out how to put the best players in the world together and make that the most interesting viewing experience in person and digitally possible, because that's what golf needs. It sounds like equally the Saudis and whatever governing bodies run the game of golf are equally interested in growing the game, making the game more international, and like putting a bunch of dollars into the sport. And that's great. Like, unless those are completely empty, I think that's awesome. But the bickering is killing me, and it's killing everybody. It's killing all of you. I know it.
We're in this funky standstill right now where, until we know what's happening on this merger, it's kind of all just like up in the air, you know, because with where things sit at the moment, I guess we have not been given any sort of firm lean onto like what does happen to some of these LIV guys if the merger does not take place, with regard to like LIV doesn't seem to be purring along all that well. That's like zero hot take whatsoever. In fact, that's like the coldest take of the day. Is Bryson DeChambeau really going to still be playing LIV in 2027, 4 years from now? Like, I don't know. But if the merger doesn't take place, the PGA Tour hasn't really said what might happen if LIV in, you know, 2025, 26, whenever it may be, just kind of finally comes to grips that we recognized on the second day of the whole deal that, like, oh, this shit isn't going to work, you know? So what happens to those guys? I mean, with this world ranking ruling coming down, we could be looking at a good handful of like players who are still very much in the prime of their career in terms of their age. Like, maybe their game isn't exactly where it would have been had they stayed out on the PGA Tour and continued to play in all of the top events. But there are guys that could be out there as just kind of like dead in the water golfers, which is a really confusing spot to have things in, but it's a realistic possibility.
Can I get like a eulogy of the listed golfers? Like, I need
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Who do you want?
That's good. Wolf. I feel like we have to start with Wolf.
Yeah. Okay. This is a tough one. I mean, so young. I mean, you hate to see anyone go so young, and especially someone who just has all of the talent, all of the ability in the world. You know, he poked his head up in the 2020 U.S. Open. He was right there with another one of his brothers, Bryson DeChambeau, comes in second, you know, fourth at the 2020 PGA. We forget about that. And, you know, like, I think of this guy as like the kid who, he was a fucking legend, like freshman, sophomore. I mean, literally, but freshman, sophomore year of college, like, this guy was a savage. Like, he got into the top fraternity and he was like straight to being whatever the term you use is, like, head of the fraternity by his senior year. And he just got a little excited about things junior year. And he had a few too many canned margaritas one night. One thing led to the next. He started, you know, taking too many different deals, and here we are, you know, having to give a eulogy. It's so sad because there was so much potential there. But that's where we're at. That's what happened. Only that was his junior year of college.
That was a celebration of life. Give me Waco. I got to hear Waco's.
Oh, Waco. That's even worse. I mean, this is the kid who, like, got his driver's license. He was a little late. You know, he was kind of messing around, didn't take driver's ed early enough, and like got it when he was 17, you know, like 2 months into being 17, gets his driver's license. And so it's time to party. Like, he's just now ready to go. He was showing like some big dick stuff. He started to play well in some events where you're like, whoa, like all the horses were there and you just absolutely lapped him. You know, you won by six lengths. And like fourth day, the kid has his license. He just got super excited, decided he was going to take it out on the highway. And there you go, right? All the red lights coming in and just a terrible scene. Absolutely terrible scene. The one you hate to see. So it's like the kid never gets off the block and the Michael block. And, you know, we're putting him in the ground, which is just so sad because I think that he can still, like, this is all speculation. As we said from the beginning, it's Mudball Monday. This is speculation central. But in this scenario where Joaquin Neiman and the likes aren't able to play in the top events hardly ever again, because like Joaquin Neiman's a perfect example. Like, that guy's so damn good at golf. He should be in every single major. Yet with where this world ranking stuff is headed, he's not going to be in the top 50. And unless I'm missing something, I don't believe he would have ever finished. I guess the Masters, the top 12 get back. So there is probably a chance that he would have finished top 12 this year in the Masters. I feel like maybe he played decent, but 100% speculation once again. But beyond that, like he's the 17-year-old that we were all excited about. He was just starting to show that, like, man, this guy can go. And, you know, rear-ended someone going 75 miles an hour. It is what it is.
I gotta hit you with one more because you were talking about Bryson earlier. I've got to hear Bryson's. And that was more like Waco's was a bit more like a crime scene report, you know?
Yeah, well, this is a confusing one, and I'm not going to say anything specific here because I don't want to offend anyone. I'm sure I've done that more than once before. But, you know, this is more of like not quite a eulogy, but it's like this is like my first draft of a eulogy because the guy clearly has maybe not cancer, but one of these different things where it's just like, hey, life expectancy is like 42, you know? And the guy's like, he's like 31 years old. And so it's more of like, how do we enjoy these next 11 years, right? Because he did win the 2020 US Open. So he's in the next 10 US Opens. He's in the majors through. And I don't know if there were any like, Coco disclaimers there where, you know, missed the British Open in 2020. And so maybe he gets an extra year there. But to my knowledge, he's basically in the majors through like 26, somewhere in there. There's a very, very low odds chance that he would be in the top 50 right now just off of some form this year. But he's going to be, come the majors next year, the guy's not going to be in the top 50. Again, he will still be in them off of his US Open win. But yeah, I mean, he's like, he's got a terminal disease and we don't really know what to do. Like, there's no science, maybe will catch up to us. I guess that's the big one here is like things can change and maybe we get to 2030 and, you know, big pharma. I mean, we don't talk a lot about big pharma, but that's the biggest of them all. Big pharma might have something to say about things and we can potentially cure this guy and like get him a second life. But as of now, like make no mistake, by 2028 or so, this guy is going to be in a hole and I don't know what to say about it. So yeah, this is kind of like, you know, it's the back pocket eulogy. Like I'm just going to sit and let this one kind of marinate for a while. And I might have some things to say about it. Big pharma might poke their neck up and maybe make me have to hold on to this one for a while. But you know, it's sad to see another, I mean, just another one, like young guy fit, like he's in the prime of his life, but he's come down with this terminal illness and not a whole lot that can be done right now.
I feel that's where I feel like part of this evolution goes in his favor, right? Because I think it's inevitable the YouTube majors, you know. And I was really sad. I was sad to see the Netflix Cup because I feel like they missed a huge opportunity. Even though all love, like no hate, I'm all in on collaboration between sports. I actually think Netflix Cup is going to be, in all seriousness, like I think it's going to be decently cool. But why in God's name have we not taken advantage of LIV versus PGA Tour on the golf course? Like, put it on YouTube. Like, Good will put that shit up. You know, Bryson will be in full form. He'll be pumping organs. Like, it's going to be a good time.
You have to do one of three things. You have to actually sit down and watch an hour straight of the Good Cup. You have to watch an hour straight of the Netflix Cup, where you have to have an hour long dinner with just yourself and Michael Block. How are you spending that hour?
Fuck, dude.
Or I can get the tweezers and you can pull all your teeth out. That's the fourth option.
Dude, give me the rusty spoon.
Which is probably where I would go.
Honestly, as a podcaster, I do have like this vested interest. I would feel like a bit of an undercover agent. Kind of an uncomfy feeling, but I would definitely have dinner with Michael Block, 100%. That would be fascinating. I would ask him so many questions. I really would. He wouldn't get the chance to think. I think he would be leaving the restaurant saying, dude, what just happened?
Do you think he chases Dwarves with Mick Ultras just like for the brand?
Yeah, he definitely, I think when we're ordering, he'll order a Mick Ultra, kind of guilt you into like, how did you not know that that was obvious? Like, I'm Michael Block. And then I'm sure he carries something on him to like, it maybe some fancy card, or he's like, I'm the gold member. Like, you knew I was coming. My name is Michael Block 15. Like, you didn't see that? Like, everybody saw that, you know?
You ever done a sake bomb?
No, actually. No, I haven't.
We need to implement blocky bombs, which is, so a sake bomb, you like, you take your chopsticks, okay, and you've got typically an Asahi, a Japanese beer of sorts.
Yes.
You should put a shot of sake on top of the chopsticks, and everyone, it's when I say sake, you say bomb, sake, 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 bomb, bomb, bomb. Everyone pounds the table, falls in, hammer it. Blocky bombs. You get a Mick Ultra with a shot of Dwarves on top, and everyone hammers it. It'd be fantastic.
I'd be shit-faced, but I'd have a great time. 100%.
It is officially Mudball Monday.
Yeah, it is. That's enough. We've got more cool shit coming your way, so have a great Monday. Have a great week. And we will keep you posted.